the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. This week we're going to be talking about caregiving and employment. We had this great opportunity to present to Dane by Local on this topic this past week, and we'd like to share with our listeners some of our takeaways. If you want to join our conversation about being a caregiver in the workforce, give us a call. Call us at 414-369-6005. I'm going to say that again, 414-369-6005. We would love to learn from our listeners about your experiences with being a caregiver while also working. What worked for you? What didn't? Is your employer great and you want to give them a shout out? Or do you struggle with creating that work-life balance as a family caregiver?
Before we dive into that topic, however, I want to back up just a minute and introduce ourselves. Now that we're on a new day and a new time, many people may be listening to us for the first time. Kristen, can you introduce yourself and tell listeners a little bit about your caregiving role?
Sure. My name is Kristen Voss, and I am a mother of two kids, and one of them I consider somebody that I am a family caregiver for because she's 21 and she has autism, epilepsy, and an intellectual disability. So for me, being a caregiver is somebody who has to do above and beyond what you would typically do in a relationship. So in the terms of her being a 21-year-old adult, I have to do a whole lot of things that I wouldn't have to do if she didn't have those disabilities. Liza, it's your turn.
Exactly. And I am a caregiver also to an adult with a disability. I have a 18-year-old son that was diagnosed with autism. And then, Kristen, you also might want to share that you did some long-distance caregiving as well.
That's true. I did some long-distance caregiving for each of my parents. One passed away over 12 years ago. My dad did. And he had diabetes, cancer, and kidney failure. And then my mom passed away about 6 years ago of COPD. And they had different experiences, but both of them really taught me a lot about how to be a family caregiver and, you know, manage all these different roles we have, and also how to do it from a long distance. And then last, but definitely not least, I'm currently caregiving and working with a old college roommate, a former college roommate who is dealing with some mental health issues and some addiction stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So I like the aspect that is kind of something, a new thought to me in regards to this caregiver. You know, we're speaking to caregivers, but the reality is if you're not a caregiver, there's a good chance you're going to become one.
Definitely.
So I've learned so much about your experience that you've had with your parents. My parents are not at the age yet or do not have any of the medical conditions that require additional care, knock on wood. Mm-hmm. So this is all really valuable to me for what I'm learning because that day will come.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people need to recognize that they're oftentimes even possibly doing caregiving and they don't even understand that themselves yet. So I know that's one of the reasons why we decided we wanted to do this show is to really raise awareness. Mm-hmm. So now that you know who we are, let's spend just a minute telling listeners why we wanted to do this show. And it has a lot to do with that fact that not only are people not understanding that they're caregivers and we want to help raise awareness to that fact, we also need people to recognize that there is a crisis going on for caregivers in America. And that crisis has to do with the fact that there are more and more people taking on this role. And that has to do with the fact that lots of facts here has to do with the fact that people are living longer. Right. And so those parents that we're now giving caregiver responsibilities for, or we're taking on caregiver responsibilities for, many of them wouldn't have been living this long just a couple decades ago.
Right. And not only are people living longer, we have the whole world of disabilities, and a lot of people, and you've said it before on the show, there would have been a point in history that your daughter most likely would have went to an institution.
Oh, definitely.
And it's awesome as a society that we've moved away from that and we're working on integrating people with disabilities into, you know, society and communities. 110% for that, but that is a lot of work. It's a lot of work to raise that awareness and to make places accessible and to get these folks integrated into the community. And a lot of that work, unfortunately, falls on the caregivers.
Exactly. And I think what has been interesting, exciting, challenging, nerve-wracking is that I feel like it's all uncharted territory, because I don't think it was even that long ago. I mean, when I was in school, we didn't have people like my daughter in my classrooms, mm-hmm. right? They were put and sent to different schools, or their parents were told. I remember a family, you know, that was in our church. They had a daughter very similar to what Nicole's needs are, and they were told to send her away to the institution that was down in Central Illinois. And Kathy, my friend, never, ever saw her sister except like one or two times a year. And so that's a whole different experience, right? And we could talk all about the pros and cons of that. But really what my point is that for our generation, because people are now integrating and including kids, young adults, and adults with disabilities in our communities, those of us that are trying to help support those people, those of us that are the family caregivers, we're in uncharted territory. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, provides a whole lot of opportunities for us with the show and with the work that we want to do. But it also provides a whole lot of the like hair pulling I do and the screaming in the middle of the night into my pillow about like, how do I figure this stuff out? Nobody else has had to. So I can't turn to anybody I know. You know, we're blazing a path.
Exactly. And you said that some of the other work that we want to do, you want to share a little bit about that?
Yes. So what we want to do with the radio show is give the mic to people who can raise awareness, who can create more educational opportunities and insight to their experiences as caregivers or working with caregivers. But outside of the radio show, what Liza and I want to do is we really want to take two different approaches in helping caregivers. And one is to go into businesses and do some type of assessment and help them determine how caregiver friendly is their workplace. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we're going to dive deeper into today with our show. But the second thing we want to do is also find ways to support caregivers themselves through either workshops or retreats, and really focusing on kind of a compassion resilience theme.
Exactly. And now that we've shared a little bit about ourselves and what we would like to accomplish with the Empowered Caregiver community, let's jump into the topic of employment. An estimated 53 million Americans are filling the role as a family caregiver, of which over 60% of them are employed. And that number is much higher for those under the age of 50, which is closer to 75% of all family caregivers under the age of 50 are employed. So as you can see, this is a big, complex issue that impacts millions of Americans daily, yet it's nothing that's really being talked about. Kristen, one thing that we talked about when it comes to the employment is retention. Can you speak to a little bit of your work experience and the impact that it had on employee retention?
Yes, I think that where there's been an intersection between me being a family caregiver and trying to be a full-time employee has been around how my employers and supervisors have responded to me. When they've seen me with Nicole at the workplace or they've seen us in the community, I see caring and compassion go across their face, but I also see some level of pity. And I think what's really struck me as we've started to do the work for this show and some of our presentations is that pity's not really helpful for me. And that's not really what I'm looking for from anybody, but definitely not from my employer. What I'm looking for is understanding about how I need things to sometimes be a little bit more flexible. I remember my brother saying to me, "How are you going to keep your job when she has seizures and you end up having to go to Children's Hospital in Milwaukee and spend like 5 or 6 days there?" Well, as a classroom teacher, it was incredibly challenging. But what I did is I like phoned into the class. I worked with a substitute. I was up all night in the hospital planning lessons and grading and emailing and keeping in contact so that I still felt like I was in the classroom, but I wasn't able to actually be the teacher in that moment, right? And so that kind of flexibility of my employer recognizing that I was doing everything I could do is something that I really appreciate. And that's what we need to encourage and help employers understand, is that flexibility with people who are taking on this family caregiver role is how they're going to retain their employees.
Correct. And then the pandemic hit. Right?
Right.
So I know you had shared a story how that was a struggle for you when Nicole was supposed to be, you know, go out to school and right. she couldn't, but you were also needing to teach. And so that's a whole nother ball of
wax.
Wax. I'm thinking a ball of what? Right, what is it a ball exactly. of? A whole nother ball of wax that we could go and talk about the pandemic and the impact that that had. But another area is recruitment. And as an employee at Civic Media during the day, I can say firsthand that finding employees costs a lot of money. And finding the best talent costs even more.
Sure. Liza, can you tell listeners about your employment experience related to finding work or joining the workforce?
Yeah, well, some of the struggles that I dealt with is, well, to be honest, there was a long period of time, you know, close to 15 years that I didn't even really bother. I mean, mm-hmm. to be honest, you know, my son had school and then therapies and it was a part-time to full-time job managing everything on his schedule. So I couldn't find a job that would offer the flexibility. I took on a few part-time jobs, and then, you know, then you always get into the whole, okay, I'm doing this for $40 a week. Is it real? Is it even worth it? So, you know, it left me out of the workforce. And by doing that, you know, I didn't pay into Social Security. I didn't have the opportunity to join a 401k or have the disposable income to contribute to the retirement fund. And, you know, probably the biggest thing was it left a big gap in my resume.
Yeah. And I think as I've listened to you talk through the years about that experience, I also think it did a number on your self-esteem. And that's really too bad, because your skills and your work ethic is incredible. And I'd hire you as an employee any day. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver. If you would like to talk with us about your experience with working while being a caregiver, please give us a call at 414-369-6005. We'll be back after this short break.
Empowered Caregiver Show, and today we're talking about working while being a caregiver. Can you believe that lost income due to family caregiving is estimated at $522 billion per year? Many people are forced to take entry-level jobs with less demanding schedules, work part-time instead of full-time, or decline opportunities for promotions, or simply quit the workforce altogether.
Liza, why do you feel this number is so high, and why do we as a nation need to address this?
Well, I think we talked about it a little bit earlier. You know, people are living longer, and they're wanting to live in their home mm-hmm. longer. There's a term for that. Age in place. Somebody's going to have to help me out with that.
Yeah, but I don't know that one. Sorry.
Yes, no, that's okay. They're living in their home longer and living longer. And then, like we had mentioned, that people with disabilities are getting integrated into the community, and that takes a lot of work and effort, and a lot of that falls on the shoulders of the caregiver. And then also the role of a caregiver is changing. You know, once upon a time, I think a caregiver simply meant supporting for you know, supporting people with their daily living needs. And now it's really transitioned to, you know, becoming part of a care team with different medical providers, providing transportation, having to advocate, seeking out resources, and then actually providing the medical care. I remember we had a guest on the show that her husband, I believe, was battling cancer and needed 24/7 care. And they gave her this long list of directions and instructions. And she said, okay, who's going to be helping me with this? And they're like, nobody. It's on you.
Yeah.
And
it's
No, I can't even imagine, especially me being someone super squeamish, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, having to take on that role that I had no education for, no training.
Exactly.
And perhaps no desire or even ability, you know, mm-hmm, if I'm working full time and raising kids to do these kind of things that are now, like I said, placed on the shoulders of caregivers to do.
Yeah, it's really intense. I remember when Nicole was toxic on a medication and we spent about 6 weeks with her in this altered state. And I kept calling different doctor's offices saying, I need help. I mean, I know we have some resources out there. I know Nicole gets all kinds of support through funding in the county. And they said, there's no one to come.
Yeah.
It doesn't always matter if you've got the money behind the person who needs this care. If we don't have people to come in and actually do the work, then it's me.
Right.
And it just, I was blown away because I just didn't feel, I felt like I was in over my head. And fortunately, it was something that was temporary. And they kind of understood that once this medication got out of her system, we were going to be back to normal. And so we didn't need to make really radical tough decisions.
Sure.
But it was really eye-opening to me about what it must be like to be a family caregiver to people who are much more medically compromised than Nicole. And I know that we've gone to some different workshops and trainings where people talk about having a medical home.
Right.
And, you know, again, that's just like, what? How can you have a medical home when you are not somebody who's medically trained?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, that almost every business has a help wanted sign on their door. Yet caregivers are in this pickle where they need to work, they want to work, yet their work options are limited due to this family caregiver role.
Mm-hmm. And another aspect that I shared in my personal story is the impact that it has on one's financial future. Kristen, can you speak a little bit about the long-term impact of not being able to be in the workplace?
Yeah, I think what it does is it really ends up disrupting people's professional paths. And so because this is something that ends up disproportionately impacting women, I think women then see that they are in a more dependent role, even though we've had so many advances for women. I not always feel like it in today's world, okay, but you know, we have had so many monetary advances. But if you're the person who has to take on that family caregiver role and disrupt your professional path, now you're taking part-time jobs or you're not working at all. And so, as you talked about, there's no system of forced or automatic deposits into Social Security. You're not getting a retirement system set up for you. Unfortunately, there is an ability to create disposable income, which can either go towards savings or back into the economy. I think what blew me away when you shared that number about $533 billion with me when we were doing, or $522 billion, sorry, when we were doing this research, is I was like, that money is now not in the economy.
Right.
Right. And so if those people that are family caregivers are making that money, could be making that money, they would be spending that money at, you know, the restaurants across the street. They'd be buying a boat. They'd be going on a vacation. They'd be investing in stocks. Right. And so it's just crazy to me that the country isn't understanding and recognizing what a financial loss this is for all of us.
Definitely. Yeah. And on that note, 45% of all American caregivers have no plan for their financial future. And sadly, that number only goes up for those that make less.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so we as a society, cannot ignore the fact that financial health is a core component of maintaining the caregiver's well-being. And it's critical to meeting the overall goals of the person receiving support and the caregiver.
Mm-hmm. And not only do caregivers typically make less, they quite often have way more expenses than those that are not caregivers. It's estimated that caregivers spend on average $7,000 a year in out-of-pocket expenses. So they're making less, but spending more.
Yep. Most people that are receiving the support from family caregivers do not meet these strict financial eligibility requirements for public assistance either. And so I think that also becomes this catch 22 and this like pocket of, you know, this hole that people fall into. Medicare does not cover most long-term support services, and few people have private long-term care insurance or other mechanisms to pay for care. So even if there is somebody that you could hire, sometimes there isn't the money either. So it's like you're in this situation where you're either running out of money and don't have the opportunity to pay somebody, or you don't have an actual person to pay.
Yes, you're right. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver. If you would like to talk to us about your experience while working by being a caregiver, call us at 414-369-6005. We'll be back after this short break.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and today we are talking about working while being a caregiver. We've covered that there are a lot of obstacles that get in the way of caregivers being able to work. If you would like to share your story of being an employed caregiver, or perhaps just your inability to be employed because you are a caregiver, give us a call. We'd love to hear your story. We'd love to talk with you and be able to debrief a little bit about what the experience has been like. You can call us at 414-369-6005. Again, that's 414-369-6005. We'd love to hear your voice. I also want to talk about something that I loved doing this week, which was we had the opportunity to do one of our first presentations about the kind of services we want to provide for employers. We were able to present at a Dane by Local breakfast, and the feedback we got afterwards was just so invigorating. I thought I think we're onto something, but I wasn't sure until people in the audience came up afterwards and said, wow, I never even thought about how many caregivers are around me. And one woman said, I didn't even understand how much of a caregiver my own mom is because of the situation she's dealing with her parents. And so it just got people thinking about the caregiving around them and then how that was something that was happening with their employees, because this was a group of employers we were talking to. And what we were trying to do is raise their awareness that 1 in 5 people are caregivers. Mm-hmm. So that means if you have more than 5 people on your staff, you have somebody who's dealing with family caregiving. And if we can raise awareness and help companies see what the little switches and little, you know, pivots they can make that will help them become a caregiver friendly employment place, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
A workplace and an employer, like that'd just be so amazing. And then the last thing that really struck me was when this woman came up and said, I've seen so much by being a patient advocate and working in insurance that we focus a lot on the people who are suffering, but then right behind them or right next to them are these other people, these caregivers who you can tell are also dealing with huge amounts of stress. And she said, I've never really known what we could do until I started hearing you guys today talk about it. And she's like, it's such a clear problem and you guys are cutting edge because you're actually talking about how we can address it. It was just so cool. It gave me all kinds of fun, like goosebumps and like, yay, we're on the right path.
Yes.
What about you? What struck out, you know, what struck you or what's
sure, sure.
Stuck
well,
out?
I think the thing, I knew the answer going into it, but we asked a series of questions, you know, are you currently a caregiver or have you been a caregiver in the past? Or do you foresee yourself becoming a caregiver? You know, is it going to be your role someday to take on the caregiver role, you know, to a parent or loved ones? And by the end of our series of questions, everybody has raised their hand.
Yep.
And that was the impact that we were going for, that this, you know, this affects everybody. So like you had talked about, we really wanted to focus on the employment piece and how do we make caregiver friendly workplaces. And, you know, there's a lot of options out there. We've all learned through the pandemic that remote work is possible. Mm-hmm. You know, creating a flexible schedule is possible. Having paid caregiver days would be something that probably nobody has really thought about.
Right.
And that's different than sick days and vacation days, because most caregivers end up using their sick days and their vacation days to provide care for the person that they're caring for. So therefore they can never go on vacation or ever get sick.
Right. Exactly. Because yeah. So many of the times they're using those days to take the person there caregiving to their appointments or to the hospital, you know. And that's where I did feel like in this catch 22 with Nicole, when I was saying my brother asked, how are you not going to lose your job? And it was like, well, I'm not going to lose my job because fortunately my employer was willing to work with me. But what I did lose is a ton of my sick leave. And so as I'm moving towards retirement now, I don't have anywhere near the kind of sick leave banked that I would typically have, which would allow me to have insurance further out in retirement before I have to, you know, before I can or I'm eligible to access Medicare. And so it's catching up with me now in my 50s.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even if paid caregiver days off is not a possibility, you know, if you're a smaller company and that's just wouldn't work in your expense structure, you know, at least having the ability to take caregiver days off unpaid, mm-hmm. and not have that fear of losing your job, mm-hmm. would be a huge benefit to most. And what were some of the other things that we came up with?
Well, I also, just to speak to that for a mm-hmm. second, is I appreciated how another woman in the audience shared how she had, and I think this is what we are trying to just ask employers to think about, is she had an employer when she was dealing with her father who was dying, who said to her, look, I don't need you to be in the office this time to this time. I need this work done. I don't care when you do it, as long as you're getting the work done. And when the work isn't getting done, that's when we'll have a conversation. And it's like, that's the kind of flexibility that we're talking about. And I think it's just really important for employers and employees. I mean, we know that you know, the workforce is changing and the workplace is changing, and people have to think outside the box in order to recruit people and in order to retain good people. And the employee, the worker, is able to have a little bit more power, for the sake of a better word. They can find other places to work that is a little bit more work-life balanced, right? And so I think if employers saw, not that their role is to, like, again, pity or go out of their way or, you know, take a hit for their employees who are family caregivers. That's not what we're asking. What we're saying is, if we just can create an environment where people feel like it's safe and they can trust their employer to say, hey, it's getting to a point where I need to be able to have some flexibility. What can we do? And can we solve these problems together?
Yeah, and that's a great point when you say trust your employer, because a lot of employees do not tell their employers that they're caregivers because they don't want it to impact their employment or have a fear of losing their job. Or maybe they tell them, but they don't tell them the reality that, you know, they go home and they start a whole nother new full-time job for many of them. So that is an excellent point. And then I know we had talked a little bit about providing financial support. Like we said, over half of or close to half of family caregivers don't have any type of retirement or savings. So, you know, can they connect with financial planners or other financial resources to support these employees? And then also, that just kind of goes along with other resources. Mm-hmm. You know, if a company was to hire somebody like us to come in and build these relationships with family caregivers, we could provide them with a wealth of knowledge. I mean, combined, we have almost 40 years experience in doing this, and the wonderful opportunity of talking to many of these people directly on our show. And that kind of goes into, you know, having a caregiver liaison in the workplace. Like I mentioned, a lot of people are scared to even bring this up.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And I know, again, for me, what has been was really beneficial is I'm a teacher. And so on our staff, we had social workers, right? And the social worker saw that I was really struggling with this dual role. And I was able to take a short leave of absence. And she said, what else can we do for you? You are loved on this faculty. People want to help you, but they don't know what you need. And so she gave me the permission to just say, I need help with this. I need help with this. You know, it was like, I need someone to just mow the lawn until we can get back into a routine. I'm not a cook. So we needed some, you know, some of those good old fashioned casseroles showing up. And then there was just some light handyman work that I needed done around the house. And within a matter of 24 hours, she had 5 different people volunteering to do different things. They showed up, they took care of the, you know, immediate needs, and then it was done. It wasn't like they had to commit to this ongoing, oh, we have to help Kristen with this and we have to help Kristen with this. It was just an opportunity to say, hey, I know how to paint. Hey, I know how to do this a little electrical work. I love to mow the lawn, you know, and they could just help me out for this short period of time. And so I think if we can, again, create a caregiver-friendly workplace, people can then reach out to their coworkers, their colleagues, or some liaison can, and then people who want to help someone with that situation know an easy action that they can take.
Yeah. And to me, that is probably one of the most impactful things. If you utilize the system right, that employers can do to support their employees, that costs nothing.
Right.
You know, and you're right. There's so many people out there that really would be willing to help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard for people to ask that in such a way. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you're struggling. Can I help you? That sounds odd. And it doesn't sound odd, but you know, it's hard for people, and it's hard for people to accept help even when they really need it. Mm-hmm. So getting, you know, like the HR department or something involved where they can do that Share the Care model. And we had the author of Share the Care on our show, which is kind of a format about what we're talking about, I think would be just a wonderful thing. And all I can really think about is when you said, I love, you know, if there's somebody that loves mowing the lawn, and I thought, nobody loves mowing the lawn. And if anybody loves mowing the lawn, please call in right now, because we need to talk.
Yes, exactly. We'll take advantage of that, right? I think actually we had a neighbor when I was growing up who did. He was out there every weekend, multiple times, listening to the good old fashioned Walkman, and just like took so much pride in it. But you're right. Probably it's not something that most people will sign up for.
Right. And maybe there are people that love mowing the lawn, and I've been a caregiver for so long that it's like that wouldn't even register.
No, not for me either. Not for me either.
Ah, that's funny.
And I guess what I really want to help people recognize is that it's our goal on this show, and it's our goal in our work, to not sound like we are whining, right? I think that's why we call ourselves the empowered caregiver. We want caregivers to feel empowered, and we want people who are trying to support and love and be around caregivers feel empowered. And we want the people who are the care recipients to feel empowered, because if they feel like their caregiver is suffering or struggling or feels, you know, put upon, then that's going to impact the way that they're, as the care recipient, experiencing their life journey. And it's just sad. And so I think it's really important for us to stress to everybody that not only is supporting America's workforce the morally right thing to do, but it's also a really important financial thing to do. We need to see ourselves as this interconnected community. I know that we are a country that prides ourselves on individualism, and individualism is great. But as we become a more interconnected species and a more interconnected society, we need each other, and we need to be able to help one another and to address a work crisis that's impacting over 50% of all employers.
Yeah. And if I was to play the devil's advocate on that, I might say as an employer, I may be hesitant to hire a caregiver because they have this excess personal baggage. So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk a little bit more about why caregivers are such an asset to the workplace. Actually, I think we may have some time right now to go into it. You want to list some of those reasons?
I mean, I think one of the quick reasons that I want to address is that I think there is just a level of skill that people who are acting as a caregiver have to have. And those skills are easily transferable to the workplace. So some of the ones that I know people have seen in me is time management. I know some of the people who know me are now laughing because I'm late all the time. But what I mean is I can manage multiple demands on my time for lots of different people. And right. So with that in my bragging about my time management, we'll come back after this short break to share some of the other skills that we see in caregivers. And we want to let you know that if you'd like to talk with us about your experience while working as being a caregiver, please give us a call at 414-369-6005. We'll be right back. Empowered Caregiver Show, and today we are talking about working while being a caregiver. If you would like to share your story of being an employed caregiver, or perhaps your inability to be employed because you're a caregiver, give us a call. We are at 414-369-6005. Again, that's 414-369-6005. We were talking before the break about how it was good. Liza said, let's play devil's advocate. And I think I experienced some of this in my own workplace where people thought she's not going to be able to handle this, right? How can she handle that child and all of the responsibilities and her job? And I think what I was able to do is kind of promote myself and advocate for myself about some of the skills I was learning as a result of being a family caregiver that were helping me in my job. And I know, Liza, as you're coming back into the workforce, you've been sharing with me that you're recognizing, wow, you know what? I did a ton as a family caregiver, and many, many of those skills are definitely transferable to any workplace. You want to share that?
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking, gosh, as a family caregiver, I should have gotten a raise, but turns out I wasn't getting paid at all. So I don't know where you go from there. Yeah, like you said, the time management, I felt like every 2 hours I had to be somewhere, every few hours. So I had to, basically plan my whole day around my son's schedule, which kind of leads in the ability to multitask, to be an effective communicator. You have to tell the occupational therapist what's going on at school, and then the school what's going on with the regular therapist. You need to keep all of those people in the loop so everyone's working and on the same page and going in the same direction. I think caregivers are excellent problem solvers. They're solution driven. Mm-hmm. They know how to manage complex systems like schools and governmental agencies, insurance,
and the healthcare system.
Like you said, advocates. I mean, they're just hardworking people. And I know one thing, the last thing that I can think of is, the ability to manage teams. And I know that you said on this show that at one point Nicole had 26 people on Team Nicole.
Yep. And thank goodness for Gmail and figuring out how to put together a Gmail group. That's what actually forced me to do it, because I realized I was cutting and pasting and making all these different emails. And I was like, okay, somebody talked about a Gmail group. So I created a Gmail group for Team Nicole. And then I went back to work and was like, oh, hey, you guys, everybody that's on this team, why don't we do this Gmail group thing? And so it was a perfect example of how having to be forced to figure something out to make life a little bit more efficient and easier
right.
as a family caregiver is something that I was then able to take those same skills and apply to my workplace, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, yeah. There's probably endless amounts. And I remember some people at the Dame by Local coming up and saying, hey, you forgot this. And hey, you forgot the resilient, mm-hmm. the resilient group of people. Definitely. Well, I want to make sure that we have time to go to our powerful questions. This is something that we have every week on our show, typically ask our guests. But since we don't have guests today, we are going to ask each other. And powerful questions to us are just questions that kind of force you to go inward and reflect on your personal experiences. So, Kristen, I'm going to ask you this one. What do you wish the government, employers, and or society at large would do to support family caregivers in the workplace?
I've had many, many hours to contemplate this, right? It's like, oh, if I could tell the world what I think they should do. But I think what's really prominent to me is helping the government recognize the benefits I'm bringing to the economy and the society by being a family caregiver. So we talked about how, you know, in years past, someone like Nicole would have been, you know, put into an institution. We as her parents would have been encouraged to do that. And we deinstitutionalized people that have intellectual disabilities and physical disabilities. We got them out of institutions because it was inhumane, and it was expensive. And so what society recognized, what the government recognized, right, and legislators and lobbyists, was that it was better to have people who had these extra needs in their communities and in their homes, and it was actually cheaper. And I think that's a really important thing for Nicole's path, for her purpose in life, is she's got a much richer and fulfilling life by being part of the community and part of our household. But I also want everyone to recognize that by keeping her in our household, we are saving taxpayer dollars. We are keeping the standard of living in this country higher. So we are more of a first world country, because otherwise we'd be more like the developing countries where people like Nicole would be out on the streets begging. And more importantly, I could use a little bit of a tax break, right? Because of the type of work I'm doing. And so it's not that I want a handout from the government, but having a tax break in terms of the kind of work I'm doing for our societal good is just something I wish people understood.
Yeah. And you're right when you say all of the money that we're saving, mm-hmm. not institutionalizing these folks.
Right.
I mean, I can't even imagine the price tag on
right.
that. I remember, gosh, 25 years ago, like when my grandmother was in assisted living, I think it was like $5,000 a month.
Exactly.
Then.
Right. Exactly. And so as people are aging and living longer and are, you know, we're getting that baby boom generation, we just have more and more people that are being impacted by this. So it's just a lot. What about you, Liza? What do you want from society, the government, or employers?
Well, I think focusing on the employer piece is just to be able to have that level of awareness that there are a lot of people in your organization that are family caregivers, and they're struggling and they're keeping it to themselves, and there are things that we can do to help them.
Yeah.
There are things that cost nothing, and there are things that are a huge return on investment. And just remembering that these people bring so much value to the workplace. You know, we just went through all of their strengths, but when you treat them right, mm-hmm. and you have that relationship, you have them forever.
Exactly. Because happy employees stick around,
right? Right.
And they work harder. And I think also, just from a more like spiritual or metaphysical standpoint, you know, it's also important for people's well-being and to be valued and to be able to be employees or be able to pursue careers and interests. And so I just really think it's important for us to recognize that.
It is. It's a big sense of who you are, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times you introduce yourself and you say where you work or mm-hmm. what your career is.
Right.
And
what do you do?
What do you do?
Yep.
And, you know, so being a family caregiver doesn't always sound that sexy, but man, is it a job. And hats off to all of you guys that are doing it. And we want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Yep. And remember to listen to us live on Thursday nights from 7 to 8 p.m. Take care, everybody.